Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Fish and Game Commission. I have to turn my seat over here. Draft Abalone Recovery and Management Plan. My name is Michael Flores. I'm Vice President of the Fish and Game Commission. And I'm joined up here on the stage with our Assistant Executive Director, Mr. John Fisher. And to my right is Ms. Adriana Shea, who is our Special Advisor to the Commission. Out in the audience, we have Gary Stacy. He's DFG, or Fish and Game Marine Region, is it? Manager, Marine Region Manager. Welcome. And John Ugaritz, who is also with the department, who's going to be making our presentation shortly. But at this time, I'd also like to welcome and thank our warden, who's with us tonight, Mr. Scott Brinkman. Welcome. We have a small audience. I don't anticipate a lot of testimony, but I'm sure it will be very good testimony, and so I'll turn it over to John.
Thank you, Commissioner Flores, staff. I'm John Ugaritz with the Department's Marine Region in Monterey, and here to briefly review the draft Abalone Recovery and Management Plan and listen to any comments and perhaps answer some questions about the plan. This plan has been a long time in preparation and has seen many reviews prior to this one, and we're looking forward to further review and comment and scheduling an adoption date at the upcoming hearing this week. The overall approach is to ensure that abalone populations are sustainable for the long term, and in particular with regard to recovering populations, get them to a point where we can have viable fisheries in the future. Looking at a schematic of the approach of the plan, going from current population levels, we would hope to recover populations of abalone that are not at a fishable level, and that would be all species of abalone south of San Francisco Bay and all species other than red abalone north of San Francisco Bay. During that recovery period, populations would increase and no fishing would occur. When a sustainable fishery level is achieved, the fishery would be open, and as with Northern California reds, we are already at that level, and take can occur and can be adjusted based on whether the populations are increasing, decreasing, or remaining stable. In the face of a decline lower than that sustainable level, we would still keep the fishery open, but likely ratchet back on the amount of take and perhaps lower bag limits, shortened seasons, etc., in efforts to reduce those declines. In this precautionary phase, we would continue to slow down fishing efforts without curtailing them completely, unless they reach a level above the minimum viable population level with some buffer area, at which point we would be forced to close the fishery again. And that would take you back to the start where you would have no fishing until recovery occurred back to that sustainable level. In the plan, sustainable fishery level is considered 6,600 abalones per hectare, and I'll show you in a moment what those numbers are based on. And a minimum viable population level is about 2,000 abalones per hectare. The fishery closure is recommended at 3,000 abalones per hectare in a fishery that is open and declining. Regarding the minimum viable population level, this is primarily taken from abalone data in California as well as other invertebrate populations and abalone populations around the world. What we see on the graph here is densities continually declining at Santa Rosa Island once they had lowered below 2,000 abalone per hectare, and it's conceivable that the populations may not ever be able to recover from this state without significant efforts on the part of our end. Regarding sustainable fishery level, we focus primarily on three long-term monitoring sites on the north coast for red abalones. The average of those three sites in the most recent surveys prior to this year and a couple 2 years ago was 6,600 abalone per hectare, and that was what we recommend as a sustainable fishery level. At the request of the commission and based on some comments we heard in the early meetings, we determined that it was important that we go back and recheck this number on the North Coast to make sure that it wasn't well below that now and still considered sustainable. And we were able to get some data from other sources for 2003 for two of those sites, the Van Dam and Arena Cove site. And this last month, we went out and collected data at two sites, Salt Point and Casper. And I'll note that the Casper site is one of the new sites that the commission asked us to add as an index site. Right now, using those four sites and an average of those four sites, the density is actually up at around 8,000 abalone per hectare. So it's well above the 6,600 per hectare number, which shows that, one, that the population is still sustainable, and two, that that 6,600 number is not overly optimistic. It's easily achieved in the North Coast. Additionally, we were asked to look at some of the San Miguel Island data, in particular to find out what is possible in Southern California and can we ever achieve 6,600 abalone per hectare in Southern California. What you see here is data up to this year from two monitoring sites at San Miguel Island. The first site at Wyckoff Ledge is a long-term site that the Park Service has been monitoring for many years. The second at Miracle Mile is a new site that was established with the assistance of commercial fisherman Jim Marshall. He had requested and wanted to see data from a more dense population site at San Miguel, and we were able to, in cooperation with him, get that done. While numbers have been decreasing steadily at that Miracle Mile site, this is primarily due to the method used, which is a fixed transect. It's one transect that you go back to repeatedly over time. That is not the same method that we use on the North Coast, which is random transects, which allow you to cover a larger area and see what's happening to the abalone because they do move, and they'll move on and off the transect. However, even with that fixed transect, the current average of the last 5 years at Miracle Mile is again up at around 8,000 or above 7,000 abalone per hectare. So it does show that San Miguel Island, A, in some areas is doing very well, and B, does have the ability to achieve that 6,600 number. The Wyckoff Ledge site, you'll note, were a whole factor lower. We're not looking at 6,000 abalone per hectare. We're looking at an average about 500 abalone per hectare over the past few years. So much, much lower densities at another site on San Miguel Island. And again, this shows the variability around the island and that some sites are good and some sites are bad. With regards to recovery, we're looking at two areas, the central coast of California outside of the sea otter range for red abalone and all species of abalone south of Point Conception. The recovery criteria mentioned in the plan are first to have a broad size range showing that recruitment is occurring and that young abalone are coming into the population and old abalone are surviving. And this would include intermediate sizes, the non-cryptic abalone, the ones that are out in the open, between 4 inches and the recreational minimum legal size, which is 7 inches on the North Coast, and large abalone greater than that 7 inches. And this would be in all index sites, and I'll get to those in a second. The second criterion is an initial density level reaching that minimum viable population level. Once you have a broad size range, you can begin doing the density surveys, those random transects, and try to achieve that 2,000 abalone per hectare so we're assured that the population is not heading towards extinction. And then finally reaching the second density level of 6,600 abalone per hectare, at which point you can consider opening a fishery. The index sites are shown here at San Miguel Island, Santa Rosa Island, and Santa Cruz Island in the Northern Channel Islands, San Diego in Southern California, and Central California outside of the sea otter range. With regards to the management portion of the plan, we're looking at the north coast of California where there is a current sport fishery north of San Francisco Bay and at red abalone only. In the interim, we establish an adjustable fishery-wide total allowable catch, or TAC, and we allow for temporary closure of severely depleted sites. This is not total closure of the fishery, but closure of certain sites if they appear to be overfished individually in small locations. And we use two decision tables to guide the process. determinations on how to adjust the tack based on density criteria of both shallow and deep water populations, and a closure reopening of depleted sites table, again focusing on abundance as well as changes in the distance divers have to go to get abalone from a site and the numbers of abalone available. The management criteria include recruitment. Again, we want to see high abundance of sublegal emergent abalones, those smaller abalones. The second criterion is density for a sustainable fishery. We want to see those at the shallow and deep depths combined, as well as the deep depths only, to show that there is a viable population outside of the fishery range. And a minimum viable population size, again, those numbers that we talked about earlier. The third criterion is catch per unit effort and serial depletion. If there is a significant decline in the catch per unit effort, or a significant increase in the distance from the access point that people are traveling, that's when we would start considering closing sites, not necessarily closing the fishery. The management tools we have available right now are somewhat coarse. We can change the daily limits, the annual limits, and the number of monthly or seasonal closures. These allow for large-scale changes in the total tank, but do not allow for small-scale refinement in the level of take. And as I just mentioned, there are limitations to the interim plan. We have limited data available for decision-making. We will only be surveying 8 index sites, and that's already increased from the 4 we had originally proposed. So there's a limited number of sites to provide information, and that's merely a logistical issue and ability to survey. Total allowable catch applies to the entire fishery range, and essentially what you're risking is that all of the total allowable catch could be taken from a small number of high-use sites, causing local depletions. And site closure can compensate for that. And then we have imprecise methods to control take, as I just mentioned. They don't allow for very fine-scale adjustments. You have to make large, coarse-scale adjustments, such as going from 3 abalone a day to 2. And they do not absolutely limit take overall. The long-term approach, however, addresses some of these issues, looking at zonal management, managing different areas within the North Coast differently and other parts of California as populations recover, using abalone tags similar to deer tags, which could be allotted on an area or a per-person basis, increasing the fishery-independent data collection. We could increase the number of surveys and provide more detailed information. Management alternatives are provided in the plan, as opposed to what I just suggested, where we are not recommending opening a fishery at this time. There are 7 alternatives listed. Alternatives 1 through 4 in the plan open some sort of commercial fishery within commercial or recreational fishery within the moratorium area prior to full recovery. The department does not recommend this at this time. We feel it will only slow the recovery process and add for the potential of further declines in species. And alternatives 5 through 7 suggest adjustments to the current Northern California red abalone fishery. We don't recommend adjustments to the Northern California fishery at this time. We feel that the fishery is sustainable and shows signs of continued support for the long-term enjoyment. Changes have been made over the various versions of the Abalone Recovery and Management Plan. The executive summary was rewritten. An additional option was added to Alternative 1 regarding San Miguel Island. Additional index sites were added to the interim plan, and as I noted, we've already been to one of those interim sites this year. Index sites this year. A peer review summary was added after our external peer review, and public comments were added, and those are all in the draft that you received already. And with that, I'm happy to receive any questions from the commission or comments from the audience.
You're currently collecting data, right?
Yes.
I think we've had people out in the field. When will that data be presented to the commission? And
you just saw some of it.
Some of it, right.
Yeah, and that's what we have right now.
Okay.
And our only additional plan at this point, beyond throughout the summer continuing to hit those other index sites up north, is that between now and your next commission meeting, not the one this week, but the following one, we will likely go to more of the commercial divers selected sites at San Miguel Island and perform random transects, which will give us, as I noted, a better feel than the permanent transects. And so I think we'll have those data for you at your next meeting.
Okay. And that'll be inserted in the plan then?
They don't really fit in the plan anywhere, but it helps guide your decision making to let you know that the numbers are good.
All right.
I'm sorry.
Additional?
So two sites would be surveyed by the next
meeting? I'm not sure how many sites. She's asking how many sites by the next meeting. We discussed with commercial fishermen this last couple weeks about where should we go and can we go with them to San Miguel to get their view of what the population is at San Miguel, which, by the way, we don't argue that that is a good population at San Miguel. They recommended, which I think is a good way to move forward, that we go to some sites that we went to with them several years ago. We have the coordinates of those sites still, and they felt that would be a good place to go, whether we go with them or not. It's hard to – they're busy urchin diving mostly, so it's hard to get them out there. So my hope is that between now and your next meeting, we will hit several sites on San Miguel. I'm not sure how many. Do random transects at those sites and be able to come up with an overall density for San Miguel Island, an average density number for you that can give you a feeling for what San Miguel as a whole looks like.
Okay. What one of the things that you listed in there as a management tool is maybe going to like a limited entry. I'm a proponent of that.
Mm-hmm.
How about in the areas that you we're not recommending opening, but maybe like in deer hunting, in our X zones where our herds are very limited and we share them basically with Nevada, going to limited entry there, a draw, and let, you know, get some...
It's certainly an option before you. One of the options in the plan is essentially that a very limited commercial or recreational fishery at San Miguel Island, that's a possibility. It poses a few... problems with regards to enforcement. They're not unsurmountable. They're they're things that we can deal with. We could charge for that limited entry fishery and help defray some of those costs for management and enforcement. It's an option that you have in front of you. At this time, we're not recommending it, but it's up to your discretion.
Okay. Yeah. Great. Thank you, John. Mr. Fisher?
We're ready to take public comments, and I have Don Gilbert, followed by Stephen Benavides. Mr. Gilbert.
The last meeting that I went to, they gave a time schedule for all this. I didn't recollect a time schedule that the recovery would take place. Do you have that, John? I mean, it was two decades, I think, minimum 20 years on the time schedule.
That's a good point, and it's important to know that we don't think recovery is going to occur rapidly in Southern California, and it very well could be on the scale of a decade or more before a fishery is viable in Southern California in our current view. So we can't give an exact number. It's an unknown at this point. But some recovery has occurred at San Miguel, and black abalone populations at Vandenberg seem to be slowly turning around from withering syndrome. So it's not an impossibility. It's just a long time.
John, we ask questions?
No, actually, let's have Mr. Gilbert, and then Mr. Benavides.
Okay. Right away. Well, I speculate over two decades for that recovery. It's a very slow process. Plus, you have to look at it since, as you know, that we're trying to set up a cultured fishery here in Point Loma, and I'd like to relate directly to that. We paid $30,000 for surveys out there, and with that, it turned out to be like 4 red abalones per acre. So that we're in there at 8.2 or 9 per hectare, something like that. What you have there, you've got 50 years of the reverse of selective breeding In other words, there has been environmental pressure never to attain legal size or to grow real slow. That's the kind of broodstock that you have in the area right now. A recovery in Point Loma is for red abalones is very low. We first started off with pink abalone because reds there were a lot more red abalones than pink abalone. We were trying to take the depleted species. Now we've changed to reds because we experimented with pinks. Now there are pinks in the area, and we have chose not to use pinks. And I reasonably suspect that the pink recovery is through our efforts. Now, with the red abalone, with this 146-page draft environmental impact report, have you seen that, Mr. Flores? The recent one? The one that was, I believe, this June 13th? Correct.
Yeah, that's not one that we would have, that the commission would have seen at this point. Am I mistaken, John?
The last time I was here with me, though, I think he gave me a copy.
They did ask for it, and they did get it in June. Okay, yeah. I wasn't here in June.
Okay. But basically, we go to Northern California, and we collect, we're proposing 200 broodstock a year. This number is there because we had public comment that we did not have enough broodstock and we could genetic bottleneck. So the 200 would, in working with a 1 in 10,000 to survive, would create a viable, an economically viable concentration of abalones. We would feed on a continual basis. It's a lot of people just think that we seed, then we stop seeding, come back and harvest. Then you just harvest and you don't have anything else to harvest. So that we pretty much guarantee sustained harvest this way. The lease area allows space for sport divers where that when we enhance the area, it will spread all over into areas outside of the lease that will be available for sport diving. Sport divers can come right into the area and dive. However, we do have an advantage of a size limit there. They could harvest pink abalones, considering that the moratorium has been dropped. With that, we feel as though it's basically a viable solution for an abalone recovery. And if we're allowed to proceed and we're successful, other people would like to do this along the coast. This area would actually start naturally producing. However, we really don't think that natural production from these abalones will provide over 2, 3, 4% of our harvest. Because it's, I'll explain this later, but there will be seed going into other areas. So it's a benefit. I mean, it's sort of like a marine protected area or a reserve where those abalones or the animals grow and then seed adjacent areas. Our project will seed La Jolla. There's not a whole lot to the south. In other words, plus, also, Point Loma is not a real good area for a marine reserve because it doesn't really fall into the criteria because it's close to harbors. It's used commercially for those two reasons right there. Then the adjacent areas to the south, there's normally a northern flow, current flow, that would take the abalone and all the progeny south into sand and to Mexico, so it's not really a good area for a reserve. So certainly would like to speed up the whole process. But we're looking at 5 years to harvest. And we feel as though this is realistic. We have to get on the bandwagon, and we have to move. It's been every year you just go, oh, my God, another year for two decades. So it's just been one thing after another. We were directed into the environmental impact report because of white abalones. We may interfere with the white abalone recovery plan. I've talked to divers. I've dove the area, and I know for a fact that there were very, very few white abalone in the area. Other divers have told me after 2,000 underwater hours, they didn't see one. So And when they did, they were in the deeper waters. Our lease area is out of the 13-fathom area, or 90 foot, and the majority of it is in 60 foot of water. We're totally out of the white abalone territory. Furthermore, if we seed right there at the edge, our larvae are going to drift entirely out of, well, they have the chance of drifting entirely out of the area. So just economics alone dictates that we go inside of the kelp, and we seed inside of the kelp bed, considerably outside of that, to avoid a loss of our product. So the issue with the white abalone is nil. In the CEQA guidelines, it states that if the negative environmental effects can be mitigated, then a mitigated negative declaration shall be wrote up. I've told this to the commission, I've written this numerous times, and nothing has been done. In other words, after years and years, we want to get this moving. We feel as though our project has a potential to spread throughout the state. It's not a natural process, because the natural process is very slow, ineffective, and worldwide we have seen abalone depletion. It's not just a situation here, but on a continual seeding program, an aggressive one, through private enterprise with capital gains incentive, we feel as though we can recover the abalone in Point Loma. I mean, people say, why don't you do the rest of the state? Well, we're just limited. You know, Point Loma is a big area for us. That's a challenge right there. We have to get on the bandwagon. We're looking at one vessel right now, a tri-hulled vessel, 106 feet below the waterline, 96 feet above, with approximately 1,800 square feet of space that will be a laboratory. And then there's two floors below that in the center hull. So we would certainly like to get the permits and everything moving as soon as possible. It's 7 months here, 6 months there. It's just overwhelming.
John, would those be, are those experimental permits that he's asking for?
It's a whole different ball.
Okay. But can he apply for an experimental permit? I mean, we're granted experimental.
Well,
no, not for
you see, when we go out, I mean, it's just like any other business. When we go out to raise capital, we do this through a stock offering. We can't say, oh, this is experimental. They may let us harvest. This is the way it was before. You go out, you do the best you can, then you come back and bring your data and then present that to us, and we will determine your economic rewards for your labor. That's what we got. We cannot go out and raise capital for the project under those terms. In other words, if we're successful, we need to move forward. This has been some of the big stippling items. And, I mean, if we're successful, then, I mean, abalone recovery is done. So, and capital gains just keeps everything going. It's a guaranteed sustained harvest. And there's, I mean, I just can't comprehend any significant environmental impacts from the project. The likelihood that we're going to overpopulate is very slim when people say we can't do it, and worldwide failures have been met. So how can we speed up the process?
A couple of things that I have for questions.
Okay.
I personally want to chase down where this DEIR is. I have not seen it myself, and it could be that it was sent to somebody else. I don't know.
I can email you one.
Okay, that would be fine. I'll give you a card.
Okay.
That would be good. The other question I had deals with department review of the document. Has the department reviewed this document, John? Okay, so the department's not reviewed the document. Okay. Then the third question that I heard you mention was you said that natural production will likely only result in about 2% of a harvest.
Correct.
And what's that
based on?
I mean,
in other words, we just continually seed, and we really don't anticipate any significant natural production.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Basically,
abalone are an animal whose reproductive success is a function of longevity.
Mm-hmm.
Like humans, they grow to, let's say, 70 years of age, mm-hmm. out of that, let's just assume a 40-year reproductive span. And this is all reasonable, you know, excluding human harvesting.
Right.
Now, out of that 40 years, if they produce four abalones, populations will increase, mm-hmm. just like humans. Mm-hmm. So they don't have to reproduce a lot. Not that the potential isn't there, but they have a very ineffective reproductive system. Mm-hmm. So natural reproduction in abalones is actually low.
And you're talking about probably a recruitment to a certain age,
well,
is that right?
If they recruit, let's say, four to a reproductive size.
Okay.
I mean,
right.
they may put out a lot more than that,
gotcha.
But
gotcha.
They succumb.
I understand
you know.
That now.
So,
okay.
So, how can we speed up the review? And we would certainly like to get seeding this fall. You know, it goes for a 45-day public review period.
Mr. Gill, can I just? I'm trying to figure out who you submitted the draft EIR to specifically, so that we can track it down.
Okay, Tom Moore, Eric Larson, and also Director Robert Traynor.
Okay. And did you present it to Director Traynor at the meeting?
No. I gave it to them through email. They have a PDF copy.
Okay. That explains. Okay.
And I have had confirmation that they received that.
Okay. Well, what we'll do is we'll track it down and then we'll...
I can email you another one. I mean, I don't see where...
I don't know that that's necessary.
Yeah, if you gave something to Mr. Traynor through email, and I suspect it was how long ago, within the last couple of months?
This was June 13th.
June 13th, okay, within the last 2 months.
Right.
Then he's got it. Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm certain
he
does.
And I know that we talked about it a little bit yesterday. I just did not know that he had the document.
Okay. Can we... if we can hurry up and get that thing reviewed and get it out for a public review period, we might be able to get started with the recovery this fall.
Well, let's both Adriana and Mr. Fisher here will follow up with Bob and get a copy of that and then find out where we're at in the process, and then we'll get back to you.
Okay.
But we'll make clear that this is obviously separate from our draft recovery plan. So.
Correct. But if you don't allow private enterprise a chance to try at the recovery, and the draft recovery plan is implemented and fails, you don't really know what you're missing.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with you. And first of all, let me applaud your efforts, because I know you've been to countless hearings and have come forward with, and I know we've had you do a few things, and I know to great expense, to your own great expense. So. I certainly appreciate that, and we'll do our end and follow up and make sure that we come to some sort of conclusion or get the ball rolling one direction or another.
And it should be a mitigated negative declaration, really.
Well, I don't know about that, but we'll figure it out.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming tonight.
Okay.
Mr. Stephen Benavides. Did I say that right this time?
Benavides.
Thank you. My name is Steve Benavides, and I'm here on behalf of the Recreational Advisory Abalone Committee. That's a committee that was set up by the bill that established a legislative authorization to do this FMP. First of all, we have worked a long time. It's been 8 years since we got the bill that we've been working on the vestiges in the beginning, and now the final product of the recovery plan for abalone. First of all, from what everything we've been presented in all of the meetings to the RAC by Laura's, by all the DFG scientists, the recovery for our prospects for the Southern California abalone population are extremely poor. As a matter of fact, they're morbid. And I am the Southern rep, the diving rep on that committee. And the deal that we brokered when we put together the bill to close the commercial fishery and leave the North open and establish the stamp. The stamp, we have $1 million to divvy up in our fund this next month at the committee. And this was the first time that a user group ever went before the commission and said, close our resource. I know that was a long time ago, but that was one of the first votes that Mr. Christman had. He had to face that issue right at the end of this bill. What this is a piece that doesn't really fit within the abalone recovery plan. It doesn't fit within the Channel Island process, but this is a letter that was written by Dr. Mia Tegner. What it is a request for somewhere in your process, and we're entering this process soon. Part of it has already gone through with the Channel Island issue because it involves Santa Barbara Island or Catalina or some other place. But there are very, very few places in the entire offshore islands, and it would have to be an offshore island, where all three of the abalone that are commonly found in Southern California can be cultured. And contrary conforming with all the science, the only thing that has really worked to recover abalone populations in situ is aggregating large amounts of individuals from the wild and letting them do their thing on their own, because a cultured abalone is a stupid abalone. It comes out in the daytime and it becomes food. There's a lot of different behavioral things that cultured abalone so far have not shown to be successful in restoring populations when we plant them. And I planted thousands of them, and we've never recovered. In my group, we've never recovered a single abalone that grew to a legal size from one of our plants, even though they were tagged for recovery later. So I know it's not part of the abalone recovery plan. I would like this letter included in the minutes. It's already been sent in that form to former Director Haight. We believe that there needs to be a place set aside somewhere where the scientists can perform these aggregation of wild abalone that they will collect in the wild, because an abalone here and an abalone there is too sterile abalone. And this has shown to be worked. The problem is abalone, everybody loves to eat them, and they've all been poached out. Every time somebody has put together an aggregation, it's been grabbed. And as soon as they found out the location of Mia's stash in Palos Verdes, it disappeared in a short amount of time. But this is proven to work. I'm not saying that this is the only thing that we've seen. They keep presenting us more stuff. We give a lot of money to the from the stamp money to scientists to help perform this. But somewhere, somehow in the process, we'd like you to consider having a place where there is no fishing allowed and there is a warden on site who can watch these things like a hawk, because if they're not watched like a hawk, they'll be gone, and give the abalone a chance to recover its population. And the fact is that set of criteria, which we believe are necessary if we're going to go to the aggregation approach, only occurs on very, very few places. And it will involve a no-take, no-fishing reserve, because if you allow fishing, the abalone will be gone. That's what we've learned. So for whatever point in the process this becomes necessary, I know it'll come again when we come to do the southern portion of the MLPA siting. We'll have to visit that again there. But if there's a place in between, we'd like to keep this issue in front of the commission, because you're going through that process now and you always have the ability to amend fish and game regulations. You could accomplish this with a regulation as opposed to a closure, but it would require a commitment for a long time. There's a lot of things that you can do, and we'd like to see them considered all the way through the process.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I just have a question, John. Has there been any studies done?
You need to come
state
up
your
and
name and
give
just
us a
ask
name.
The question.
Rick Sparhawk. John, in your presentation, you talked in terms of doing some studies, density studies. Has there been any done in Point Loma area to understand what the current density is right now and how recoverable that area is based upon that density?
I know we have done studies at Point Loma historically, and I know this year we did some surveys in Point Loma, particular for urchins, but we did look at abalone on those as well. So there are some data there in Point Loma, and as you may have noted, one of the key areas in the plan is the San Diego area, and so in the plan we go into some detail about sites within those areas where we do intend to do studies to see what the populations are As I recall from this year's work, there is some numbers of red abalone. It's surprisingly larger numbers than we had expected to see there, but still at very low levels, as Mr. Gilbert stated.
Mr. Flores, I don't have any other speakers listed here.
Okay. Any other questions or comments from the audience?
Or John, yeah, one more thing to add to Mr. John or John here on the abalones being a their reproduction success, a functional longevity. You end up with primarily adult populations, mm-hmm. just like the human race.
Sure.
White abalone are a perfect example of this. I mean, you would I dove for white abalone. I mean, I used to dive commercially for abalone from 72 to 84, and I took a lot of whites, so I know whites. And you would go through an area and sometimes hit like seven dozen or so in a little reef from as long as this building and maybe 10 feet wide, 15 feet wide, and you may see three or four juveniles afterwards. And I mean, this was especially noticeable with white abalone, but other areas there was recruitment. You know, you would see them throughout the size limit, but as soon as they grew up to size, they were removed. Mm-hmm. So it's... not a good situation. Abalone are a hard one, a real hard one to manage. Mm-hmm. We have the best solution.
Okay, thank you. John, did you want to follow up?
I don't know if I can follow that. A couple comments on studies and what we can do to actively recover populations, because that is another thing we are looking into. And Mr. Benavides recommended aggregations as you are well aware, Mr. Flores, there are some no-take areas now where we could test aggregating abalones in absence of other fishing so that poaching is less of a possibility. That is one option that we can try. It hasn't worked as well as it did historically at Palos Verdes, as it says in the letter, but it's certainly something we can continue looking at. We are currently looking at, through some university studies, of outplanting post-competent larvae. It's a little different than what Mr. Gilbert's talking about, but it's hatchery-reared larvae that have been grown not to the point where they're young animals, which we do believe is not a very viable outplanting method, but to a larval stage and outplanting those. There's quite a bit of study that needs to be done before that method is really tested on a broad scale. All of those options are open to us, and we're very interested in pursuing some active recovery as opposed to just wait and see, because as several people here have mentioned, just waiting and seeing may be longer than any of our careers. So that those are options that we are looking at as well.
Okay. Thank you very much.
One more thing. Yeah, that's basically what we are doing is releasing the larvae. Is it proper for the department to repress our activities for years and years and years and then go do this themselves? So we're set up. We have the technology. We can do this now. So okay. That's it.
Thank you.
Do you want abalones?
Yeah, we want abalones. Thank you very much. It's been your night.
Just to clarify for the record, because I often see some emails come back after these meetings, the department is not outplanting larvae at this point. We are doing some studies to determine the efficacy of that method,
yeah.
In particular looking at habitat and what predators on larval abalone there are.
Aren't they doing some of that in New Zealand?
I believe they are. I believe there are some. So there are some success stories, and that's why we're starting to look at it here. One of the biggest problems they're having is with predators on the larvae, and so the question is where do you do it to make it most effective?
Okay, so. Great. Thank you. I want to thank you all. I want to thank staff. I'd like to thank the gentlemen who are putting this live on the Internet for their hard work, and our warden back there for spending time with us today. I'm glad you could make it. I know it was a small hearing, but this is, I think, valuable information that I need to take back
for myself and other commissioners, and I'll certainly pass on recommendations. And I'd like to thank you all for coming tonight. Meeting's adjourned.